Time is 7 minutes after 10 o'clock, and here today to talk about a concert this Sunday featuring Gustav Holst's The Planets, as well as a concerto performance by the Stallburg Silver Medalist, is conductor Bruce Uchimura and the Stallburg Medalist himself, Oliver Herbert. Welcome to WMUK.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This concert, again, for folks who just tuned in, is at 3 o'clock on Sunday at Miller Auditorium. And before anyone gets started and catching up just yet, I have something rather special I thought I'd like to play, and that is Oliver's interview by phone before the Stallburg took place. You were still a contender at this time and hoping for a good outcome, and this will be a great way to get to know who you were just last May.
My name is Oliver Herbert. I'm a 17-year-old cellist from San Francisco, California, and I currently go to school at the Colburn Music Academy in Los Angeles. My primary teacher right now is Clive Greensmith.
The English cellist who played with the Tokyo String Quartet, am I right?
Yeah, that's correct.
How long have you worked with him?
I've worked with him since fall of 2014. He's been really fantastic and incredibly supportive. Even though I've only been with him for a short time, I think I've experienced the most improvement from my whole time playing the instrument.
Is it a particularly good learning environment that you have right now?
Yes, it is. The Colburn School is really amazing facilities and great halls that we play in, a lot of performance opportunities, and a small environment that, you know, everyone gets the individual attention they need, because there's the faculty to student ratio is really great. It's about maybe one faculty member to three students. So yeah, it's very nurturing.
Well, it sounds like you made a good choice. You said you grew up in San Francisco?
Yes. I grew up in San Francisco. Both my parents are musicians in the area, and my dad used to be in the San Francisco Symphony. So, I grew up in a very musical family and studied some piano with my grandparents, and there was always music around the house.
It's kind of like a second language at home.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was just something that, playing music was a very normal thing for me. I didn't really think too much of it because I started quite early.
Well, did you struggle with any aspect of it, like learning to read music or even playing by ear as sort of the opposite thing, or getting the discipline to practice, those kinds of things?
Yeah, I think originally I actually played mostly by ear because I was trained through the Suzuki method. And I think that was really valuable in the end. But at the same time, when I started joining orchestras and playing more in my early teens, it was very hard for me at first to sight read fast. So that was something that I definitely had to work on and catch up on a little bit.
The Stallburg competition is named after Julius Stallburg, who was a conductor of Kalamazoo's Junior Symphony. I realize this is a solo appearance you're going to be making, but I wondered if you could talk at all about any musical value that you place on being in the orchestra.
Yeah, before I moved away from home, I was in the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra as the principal cellist there, and I think that experience gave me, you know, a taste of what it's like to be a professional, you know, showing up on time, prepared, really knowing the part. And I think that from a professional aspect and also just the musical aspect, getting to meet and be a part of a community of young people also focused and doing the same thing was really great. And also the way that my particular youth orchestra worked is that we got to rehearse and perform in Davies Symphony Hall. So it gave me, you know, a great experience of being able to perform in a fantastic concert hall with the great conductor, Donato Cabrera. And I think just overall, it was just a very very educational and musically significant experience for me.
What is the concerto that you've prepared to perform at the Stolberg competition?
I've prepared the Schumann concerto in A minor. I think it provides a lot of contrast, and it's something that I've learned a lot from playing the piece.
All the best to you, Oliver, in your appearance at the Stolberg, and I hope you have a wonderful time.
Oh, thank you.
That's my guest, Oliver Herbert, in our conversation early last year. Oliver, you went on to win the silver medal at the Stolberg competition. Why don't you tell us about the actual experience of the competition, what it was like, how you felt that day?
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, I was a little bit nervous, maybe more so than a typical performance, because it's, you know, competition settings, you just have that kind of fear of being judged. But with that being said, this particular competition and the general atmosphere of being here in Kalamazoo was very supportive, and I had a great host family and everyone took care of me, and I felt very comfortable. So I think I was just able to kind of make music, which is the important thing.
One thing I thought of when I was talking to the finalists was, you know, some of them were coming from the Chicago area, you know, a 2-hour drive. But you and I think someone else from Vancouver, you know, long, long trips. Did you sense you were at a disadvantage with that, or did you have time to kind of get your energy back up?
Yeah, I think I actually flew into Chicago and then took the train up. So it was quite a long journey, but it wasn't too much of an issue, and I certainly didn't feel like, you know, there was a disadvantage of any kind, so it was fine.
So, are you still at the Colburn School?
No, I actually graduated from their preparatory division, and I started my bachelor degree at the Curtis Institute of Music just over a month ago now. So
wow.
I've been settling in there in Philadelphia.
Holy cow! That's pretty cool. So you're in the other side of the country. The Curtis Institute really is one of the very, very best, and always will be, I think. I believe you get a lot of independence when you're studying there.
Yeah, you do. I think what really attracted me to the school was that sense of independence that you're talking about. For instance, with chamber music, you get to form all your own groups and play whatever repertoire you want. So for me, you know, being really into chamber music, I get to do as much as I want and really form my own schedule in a way that it's tailored to me. And all the resources and faculty are there for you at your disposal. So it's really a special place to be.
We didn't talk about chamber music. I didn't know it was a particular love of yours. Is it the classics or modern chamber music? What are you interested in?
Well, I mean, I just recently started playing some of the really great repertoire. So I think, you know, there's so much of it that takes a while to kind of make your way through it. But this summer I got to go to a really special festival in Ravinia, which is north of Chicago, called the Ravinia Staines Music Institute. And the level of playing was just so high, and working with these great musicians really changed my perspective on chamber music, and it's really gratifying experience to be in a really great group with great pieces.
Bruce Uchimura is conducting Sunday's concert, and Bruce, you also play in a trio, the Merling Trio, of course, for over 20 years now.
Well, more than that.
More than that.
We won't get into that.
Yeah. You might have kind of an ideal a combination of elements in your career with the conducting and playing cello as a soloist and in the trio. It's a nice combination.
I most certainly do.
You've often talked about how doing just one would be a disservice to the rest of yourself. Like, you know, you learn by doing all of them together.
Yeah. Well, you have to be good on the cello, proficient on the cello. You know, that's first and foremost if you want to play anything. And then chamber music is a very natural progression for the cellist, particularly because of all of our great repertoire. All the great composers wrote volumes and volumes of chamber music, and sometimes their best work in those genres. And the natural progression to conducting, I know maybe that's why lots of cellists become conductors, because we sit in orchestra, bored usually, watching the conductor spit and scream over the first violinist for not practicing their parts. You know? So we learn how to, we listen a lot more, whereas the violins who for example, I'm talking traditional, right, roles, have a lot more notes than we do. So we sit and can listen to all the wonderful sounds that come out of orchestra. So it's kind of a natural progression to conducting, which is basically administration and coordination, more like a football coach sort of thing. It always occurs to me, though, at the end of something, conducting, how come I'm the only one that doesn't have an instrument participating in this beautiful music, So that's the one downside of conducting. But you definitely use your chamber music skills
in
conducting as well as playing an orchestra.
Oliver, who is the cello professor there at the Curtis Institute?
It's Peter Wiley and Carter Bray, and I get to study with both. Peter Wiley most of the time, and Carter Bray, because he is so incredibly busy with the New York Philharmonic, I see him maybe once or twice a month. So it's a great balance.
Gosh, I just like the caliber there is so high. You can't help but develop in yourself this point of excellence that you're always trying to hear and reach when you're surrounded by people like this.
Yeah, it's very inspiring. I think people say that when you're at that school, you learn just as much. I mean, dare I say, if not more from your peers than, your faculty, because they're just so great and inspiring.
Are you playing in a quartet or a trio or both?
I'm playing in a piano trio, a clarinet quintet, a cello quintet, and a few Baroque pieces.
And you started school, 2 months ago.
Yeah.
That's called saturation point.
And a string quartet.
Wow. Yeah.
And he practices, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
Don't
terrific.
You, Oliver?
Yes.
Oliver is the featured soloist and Stolberg Silver Medalist who's performing with the University Symphony Orchestra this Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium. And what is the concerto you'll be playing?
The Schumann Concerto, which is the same piece that I played for the competition, actually.
Well, actually, we do have a recording of that day and that performance, so why don't we take a short break and listen to a portion of the Schumann performance you gave last, was it May, Margaret? Yes, okay. There's a good excerpt there from the Stolberg International String Competition from last May, a live performance by my guest cellist Oliver Herbert, who's back in town, now a student at the Curtis Institute, and he'll be performing that very work with full orchestra this Sunday. It'll be the University Symphony Orchestra, which is led by conductor Bruce Uchimura, another cellist, and Bruce has also programmed one of the great works, one of top five works of the 20th century that people know, The Planets, for this Sunday. So, but let's finish up with this Schumann piece. It's a wonderful economic piece, which for a romantic composer is kind of surprising. You know, he doesn't waste anything, and the movements move one right into another. It's like a really tight sort of piece. Perhaps you can elaborate a little more maybe on that or anything else you have to say about the concerto, Oliver.
Yeah, well, I think one of the reasons I'm most looking forward to playing this with orchestra as opposed to piano, and this will be my first time, is that it has such an amazing dialogue between the soloist and the orchestra, and the way Shimon orchestrated the piece. In the third movement, there's so much fun, you know, between the winds and the cello, and even in the first movement, you know, it's almost as if, you know, the soloist is Shimon and the orchestra is the world around him, in a way, with all these offbeat, moving, kind of wavy sounds. So it'll be very fun to play, I think.
The back and forth. Well, that sounds like a critical issue for you, Bruce, bringing the orchestra as a full partner into this concerto.
Yeah, it's a very interesting piece because Schumann originally, I think, intended it, you know, he didn't want the word concerto attached to it. He wanted concert piece, Concertstück. So, you know, that's why he plays around with the form. And the form is pretty traditional. You can definitely hear sonata allegro and rondo in the last movement, sonata allegro in the first movement, and then this beautiful langsam, you know. So there is kind of form within the movements, but they're continuous because he abhorred, apparently, applause between movements. That was one reason, you know, to continue the thought. So I think some of the most remarkable things in this concerto are the transitions. You know, the link, how he gets you, it gets us to the from this kind of passionate soliloquy first movement into one of the most beautiful song-like slow movements, and then the dance-like last movement. So
that's the excerpt we heard, was from the slow movement to the transition to the last movement.
Right.
Now, Bruce, I have to assume that you practically have this memorized, both the solo part as a cellist and the orchestral part.
Sort of, you know, but it's different roles, right? Definitely different roles. Again, we go back to our chamber music philosophy, you see. So in the role, it's a very difficult cello part. So when you're playing the cello solo, it's, you know, your mind is on a lot of things. But when you're the conductor, you're there to support, you see. So that's very different.
You would have prepared this with a lot of students as well who were getting ready for auditions.
Certainly,
and things
yeah.
like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so, everybody plays it differently. It's a highly quirky concerto.
Really?
And you know, you have to sort of find your place with it. It's very difficult. You know, it's not like some of our other big Dvorak and so forth and so on. You know, there's a certain amount of, there's of course personal stamps on those too, but it, you know, there's a lot of work involved. But this one can be very personal, very divergent with tempi and sound and so forth.
That would be hard, I think, as a young player. I mean, I think it takes time and experience to know what really works for you and what you think is a distinct interpretation. Oliver, what do you have to say to that? I mean, do you struggle with knowing when to stop with your interpretation?
Well, I think the steps that I take, I mean, after putting this piece down after the competition for a while and taking a few months away from it, when I revisited it and for preparation for this concert, I just picked up the score and really tried to see exactly what Schumann wrote. And I think as interpreters, you know, the best way of going about it is to see exactly what the composer wrote and how, what those markings might mean. But in terms of my own interpretation, I mean, I think I just have an ideal of the way I want it to sound in my head, and I try my best to replicate it sound-wise through the instrument, but that's all I can really do. I think it's just having that ideal instead of figuring out how to play it and then figuring out what you want to say. I think I tend to like to have the opposite approach.
That's $1 million answer he gave, you know, because that's one of the big problems in music. Because first has to come the concept in your brain, which is difficult for a young person or an old person for that matter, you know. Then you start handling the technicalities. Schumann is so difficult. I think a lot of us approach it from the opposite. You know, it's like, ah, treble clef, this, that, you know, and figuring that out. And all of that has to be figured out. But if you don't have a tonal concept to begin with, it's, you're kind of wasting your time, you know, with something like this. Other pieces, like that's what I said, other pieces, not so much Rococo, Dvorak, where you have to play all the notes, you know, and loud and fast. But this one requires a lot of thought, mm-hmm. you know, so I think that's what's difficult about it.
You know? Well, you can see what Oliver came up with on Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium in a free concert with Oliver Herbert as soloist and the University Symphony Orchestra in its finest show of color this fall. Bruce Uchimura conducting the program. Will that begin with this wonderful overture by Wagner?
Wonderful overture.
Or prelude. Is it a ton? No, it's Meistersinger. Yes.
One of his pillar pieces, you know, and then, and it's so descriptive in terms of the Meistersingers, you know, who were this ancient cult, right, in German cult, of that had all kinds of prerequisites in order to become a member eventually, you know, and songs, right? They were songwriters and song singers, and so they must have been a very pompous bunch. And that's what this overture suggests. You know?
Bruce, I went to the Met HD broadcast last December. I feel like I'm still watching it. I mean, it was 6 hours long.
Can you imagine? I can't.
And yeah, they took the Meistersinger Guild very, very seriously.
Yeah.
But I wonder if we could move on to the planets.
Surely.
I've got a CD queued up here. We have Chicago Symphony, in fact, ready to listen to some of the highlights. When I was thinking about the planets this morning, it occurred to me that I still haven't decided whether Holst is an impressionist composer or, you know, an English pastoral sort of composer. Some of the melodies here would put Elgar to shame, but other things are like Debussy would like to steal this hazy, wonderful Neptune and
sadly, you know, yeah, it's true about the music. It's fascinating music. Each planet reveals its, in this case, astrological, right, characteristics rather than the actual planet that we might conceive. And Holst, unfortunately, didn't admire this piece, one of his best pieces, and he sort of went, eh, and actually downplayed it through most of his life. Like, he couldn't understand what the hype was. He wanted to be recognized for some other works, and I don't know what that was, you know, maybe it's some tortured mind, but you know, the piece is obviously very successful and very attractive in many superficial ways, as well as very creative and inventive, you know, compositionally. And so I don't know what he's talking about in some ways. You know, it's like, well, if you wrote something really good, then it's really good. But he really did downplay it throughout his whole life. Isn't that interesting?
I find that hard to believe. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, Mr. Holst, but you'd have to top it with a big symphony that as long as that in order to at least have me consider, you know.
Isn't that interesting? And he wanted to be known for these other works that were not nearly as creative and good and well-known as this. You know, sort of like the one-hit wonder. Oh, can you sing this song? You know, and that's the only song. It's like, I sing other songs, you know. And it was a bit like that with Holst, unfortunately. But we don't have to know that. We can just enjoy it.
It gets off to such an incredible beginning.
Oh, you're telling me. Talk about a blockbuster. So Mars, is that what you're going to play?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. The Bringer of War, fantastic use of ostinato, right? He starts the piece with collegno on the strings, which is a very interesting way. And the meter is 5. So he's, again, this is Holst's version of juxtaposing duple and triple rhythms, right? And the melody, as it is, doesn't really have harmonic implications. It's really a bunch of triads that go on and on and on. And huge brass. He was a great orchestrator. I don't know who he studied that with, but he was a great orchestrator, as you will hear in this.
Well, there's the planets and the first movement, Mars, the bringer of war.
There it is.
There it is. My guest, if you tuned in during the music, is conductor Bruce Uchimura, who will lead the University Symphony Orchestra in a full performance of The Planets on Sunday at 3 o'clock. It's a free program in Miller Auditorium, which also features the cello concerto of Schumann performed by the Stolberg Silver Medalist Oliver Herbert. Now, in keeping here with The Planets, this has one of the greatest openings of all orchestral, you know, suites. But there's so far to go from here, so many different things that are going to happen. Give us a peek at what comes
next. I have to say this one quote about that, because that music, that opening is so impressionable. You know, it leaves an impression in your mind. And it's war, right? And one guy said, "War is a senseless, mechanized horror." And that's Holt's real subject in this particular movement. Interesting, right?
It has this inevitability.
Around World War I, yeah. This was around World War I, and I think maybe he had that in his mind, for sure.
Like a machine?
Like a machine, yeah. Mm-hmm. You can hear that mechanized, right? Okay, then talk about, well, so War and Peace, and the next movement, of course, is Venus, the bringer of peace, and it's sublime. And as you said, here are sounds of Debussy, Impressionism, right? So we call it maybe British Impressionism. Orchestrates very beautifully, lots of solos for all instruments, right? He was very partial to solo flute, oboe, violin, and it is peace. Funny movement, because there's lots of subtle tempo changes, but the general overall mood and sound is that of peace and, you know, tranquility. Mm-hmm. He loves to use auxiliary instruments. So, by the way, this is a huge orchestra, as you could hear in Mars, right? So he brings in not one, but two tubas, and tenor tuba is played on euphonium. Very interesting instruments like bass flute. I don't think I'd ever seen one since this had it. And they had a bass oboe, which we could not get. So that's being played by various instruments, sometimes the bass clarinet, sometimes the bassoon. Six horns, four trumpets. You know, it's a magnificently huge orchestra, all kinds of percussion. And dominantly in the slower movements, celeste and harp, two harps.
You have two harps. A celeste, that's a little keyboard instrument that you hear the beautiful sound coming from, and you stare at everybody in the orchestra and you're looking, where is that coming from?
Yeah, and he uses it very prominently. And I must say, orchestrated very well. Lots of times you can't really hear it, but this one he makes it like the very end of Venus. Is very beautiful, and all just ends very peacefully with the celeste arpeggios.
One of the shortest movements of The Planets comes after Venus, and it's kind of appropriate because it's Mercury.
Right, the winged messenger.
Yeah.
So he uses scherzo form, uses compound meter in this. Very difficult for the orchestra. It sounds very easy, but it's very difficult. ABA form. The A form is repeated, a kind of extended with a longer coda. The B is peaceful and very repetitive, sort of, you can hear it, British, right, folk theme that's sort of just repeated in various instruments. And then the scherzo repeats itself. But the scherzo is treacherously difficult because, you know, we talk about orchestral musicians and their problem with not seeing the whole picture. So they have this. The bassoon part has ba-da-da, five bars rest, diddly, da-da-da. You see what I mean? And another. And so for them to connect, of course they're listening, but, you know, for them to connect. And what it is ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Everybody will hear these eighth note motive going on. But that's all they see, you see. And so it's very difficult. Like, well, what if you lose count? You see what I mean? And they know what they're supposed to be listening to subliminally, but it's very difficult to do that. You know, Margaret is shaking her head. And no, she knows what I'm talking about. The horn players always go through that. Horn players are like violists, right? They have no identity. They're sometimes with the brass and sometimes with the woodwinds, excuse me. Or they have all the identity. Sometimes harmonic, sometimes soloistic, you know, very interesting. So,
well, speaking of English folk song, you know, the tune in this next movement, Jupiter, I believe that was just lifted away and is sometimes used as a hymn.
Yeah.
In England.
It is.
You can hear it.
To thee, my country, or something like
yeah.
that. It's a famous British hymn, apparently.
But don't let me stop on, although this might be one of my favorite movements.
Jupiter, you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, Jupiter.
Yeah, after Mercury, right, we have Jupiter. And then after Jupiter, which is a very famous movement, by the way, and quite difficult because the folk element is not metric as we know it, right? So there's three bars, five bars, although for the listener, it sounds great. you know. But it's difficult and treacherously orchestrated in that counting way that I was telling you about. Then came Saturn, which was Holst's favorite movement. He loved that movement. And when you listen to it, you and I would probably go, and why did he like this movement? Because it's really kind of oozy.
It's slow.
It's very slow and kind of, you know, very simple in its element. Very attractive writing use of syncopation. So you don't know it, right? Again, the syncopation is not a very apparent. Then we have Uranus. That's the proper pronunciation, I think. And that's more very folky, right? You can hear folk songs in that and kind of fun. Also difficult, treacherous, but very good a use of the whole orchestra in that way and in compound meter again. He begins with these huge brass chords that you can see the magician conjuring up his audience and say, here's what I'm going to do for them. And then finally, this very, very obtuse movement, Neptune, the mystic, he calls it. Again, he returns to the 5/4 meter at the very end. Begins with, this is where the bass flute becomes audible because it's flute and bass flute in this very quizzical opening. And then very sustained chords with all the string writing and celeste and harps doing all these arpeggios. The joke in the score is that one measure is a page long because of all the notes he wrote for the harp and the celeste. It's basically arpeggios, you know. Mm-hmm. And then finally brings this chorus in, Cantus Femina, Di Gautier's group is going to sing with us, off stage at the very end. That sings first a high G out of nowhere. You know, I'm sure the audience is going to go, where's that coming from? You know, and then they actually participate and end this thing very, very quietly and sort of fades into the cosmic universe.
I don't know how many times I've read and been told this is, Holst did not have the astronomical, you know, stellar bodies in mind, these no. actual planets. But I can't help but think of space. I can't help but think of the mysterious looks and of planets out there.
I agree. You know, I don't know if that was like, maybe he was fooling us.
You know? Well, Bruce, this concert is at 3:00. It's free and open to the public at Miller Auditorium Sunday afternoon at 3:00. And this is the big centerpiece, The Planets, Opus 32 by Gustav Holst. And at this point, I believe I'd like to just finish the hour with Neptune the Mystic, so we can listen to that for the rest of the hour. So at this point, I will say final thoughts from either of you. Oliver, anything to say? Encourage folks to come out?
Yeah, I'm just really looking forward to it and hope to see many of you there. It'll be a great concert.
Concert is free and open to the public. So please join us on Sunday.
All right. Well, Bruce Ujimura and Oliver Herbert, thank you so much for coming to WMUK.
Thank you.